Hello and welcome to Savor, production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about chopsticks.
Yes. It's been a minute since we've done a utensil.
It has been.
Yes.
I will say this one was inspired by me finding an article on howstuffworks.com about chopsticks and turning it into a episode of Brain Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, we haven't done chopsticks yet.
Yeah. Always curious where your inspiration comes from.
Lauren. Oh, me too.
Because you never can tell, you know? Sometimes something just catches your attention and you're like, oh, yes, we must talk about
definitely.
That. And by saying you, I mean both of us.
Sure. Of course.
Yes. I will say, I have a lot of chopstick memories. I love using them now. I love it. But I was so bad with them when I first went to China. And just in general, like, you know this, Lauren, I think. I have, like, a shaky countenance. I'm just a shaky person. And it actually runs in my family. So it's just hard with chopsticks where I would just shake.
Sure. It's that precision that you need. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's precision. And so when I went to China, which I was there for about 8 months.
And that was in college, right?
Yes, I was in college. And I was not good at them at this point. And I had learned some Mandarin and I'd been studying it, but I had been told, but also foolishly anticipated there'd be pinyin everywhere, which there was not.
Oh.
Not anywhere. And also just the way the language works is it, even if to my untrained ear, it sounds like I am saying the same thing with the tones.
Yeah, the inflections and the, right.
Right. So I go to China and I'm struggling with chopsticks. And I remember on more than one occasion, I was given like gloves to reach into shared pots for food by like the restauranteurs. I was given rubber banded chopsticks. And once a very kind, worried group of ladies that I was in some way affiliated with. I just didn't know them very well.
But they weren't total strangers. They were.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. After witnessing my terrible chopstick skills, they took me to an American-style bakery and got me a lot of cake that I could eat with my hands. Which was very sweet of them.
Oh, that's very sweet, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
And then one time, I was at one of those tables where it, you know, rotates.
Uh-huh.
So I had that added challenge.
Oh.
And then the chopsticks. And so I resorted to stabbing something with my chopsticks, like you would a fish with a spear or something.
No. Oh, that's one of the things you're not supposed to do.
I know. But the man next to me, he laughed because I was very sorry about the whole thing. But I was just so desperate. And
yeah.
He said something like, however you can get the food into your mouth is the right way.
Aw.
Yeah. And I'll never forget, like, the first week I was living by myself. And, yeah, everything was written in Mandarin and there was no pinyin. And I was trying to eat a cup of noodles with a toothbrush and a comb as my chopsticks because I did not know how to ask for chopsticks in a way where I was understood. Yes. But that being said, nothing like this experience to learn quickly. And I did.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
now
sure.
I feel like I'm pretty good with them.
Yeah. I usually feel pretty confident with a pair of chopsticks. And there are certain foods that I'm just like, this is so much easier with chopsticks than it is with any other. Mm-hmm. Like, why do we eat any kind of pasta with not chopsticks? It really only makes sense to me. I'm just like, well, but then you just grab the noodles and then they're easy to, I don't know.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't think, gosh, I feel like I didn't learn to use them until high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I lied to my dining partner the first time that it was, like, the only option. I was, like, at a sushi place for the first time, and I was like, oh, yeah, I know about sushi. And I know how to use chopsticks. And I felt like really like cool and grown up, and I was not. And it was probably very funny. So
right. Yeah.
Yeah. but that's fine. The learning curves for everybody. Yeah.
One of my best friends in high school was from Taiwan, and her family owned a Chinese restaurant. And I would go there pretty frequently, and I was determined to learn how to use the chopsticks. And there was nothing like the burning embarrassment of, you know, a meal you're hoping no one's noticing that you're struggling so much. And then eventually these chopsticks with the rubber band end appear at your side and the instructions, and you're like, done it again.
Oh, that is the thing though. Like, I mean, like, people just want you to eat. They want you to enjoy the food. They, right? I mean, you know, no one wants you to be struggling. That
right. Well, most people don't. Well, I've also heard a lot of superstitions around chopsticks, and I read about some for this, but would love to hear from anyone from these places that use chopsticks more regularly or might have these superstitions. I know we've touched on some of them in past episodes before, but always love to hear from people that are on the ground.
Oh, yes.
As they say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I think of chopsticks, the thing that I think of now is a super producer, Dylan, eating Cheetos, because this is a thing I discovered when, you know, back when we were in the office, and Dylan's desk got moved to staring mine right in the face, as is so good with open office concepts where you're just, you know, like 3 feet away from someone and just looking at them all day. Dylan is a delightful human to look at. That's, you know, it's, I felt bad because I feel like a weird goblin all the time. And I was like, oh, do not witness me. But I discovered through this process of, you know, staring him in the face all day, that he loves Cheetos. He loves hot Cheetos.
Oh, yeah.
And he only eats them with chopsticks so that he keeps himself neat and clean.
Yes.
And this is so genius.
That we even have a shirt.
We do. Oh, yes. Gosh.
Cheeto genius. I gave him some engraved chopsticks for his birthday a couple years back, which was just recently, if you want to wish him a happy birthday.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. I'd never seen it. I'd never seen that before either. And I was immediately like, of course.
Right?
Just makes sense.
It does.
You can also see our episodes on Sporks and Forks. And I guess rice, ramen, and pho, we kind of talk about chopsticks a little bit in those episodes. So you're always welcome to check those out if you have not heard them already.
Uh-huh.
But in the meantime, I guess that brings us to our question. Chopsticks. What are they?
Well, chopsticks are a type of eating and cooking utensil. They're a pair of usually identical or semi-identical slender sticks. Each one like a half-ish or maybe less than half of the width of a human finger. Anywhere from about 6 to 12 inches long, that's about 15 to 30 centimeters, typically held in one hand between the thumb and the first couple fingers and used to manipulate food. They can be made of metal, plastic, wood, ceramic, stone. I mean, anything stiff enough to grip, really. Different materials lend themselves to different uses. If you're going to be interacting with food that is in the process of cooking, say on a tabletop grill, stainless steel chopsticks, you know, like won't melt or catch on fire, convenient, and will also stay cool enough in your hands that you won't burn yourself. Further convenience. Coated wood and plastic are popular for personal reusable table chopsticks. Disposable chopsticks are a strange category and kind of separate. These are given out at restaurants or with takeaway and are meant to be used once and then thrown away and are typically made of lightweight wood, bamboo, birch, cottonwood, increasingly aspen. And on the other end of the spectrum, chopsticks can get heckin' fancy. And especially historically, they have, with all kinds of methods of carving and lacquering, materials like ivory, silver, gold. Gold is so soft. Why would you use anyway? I don't know. jade, coral, tortoiseshell, all kinds of inlays like enamel or mother of pearl or shark skin.
I almost brought these lightsabers that looked like lightsabers. Lightsabers that looked lightsabers. Chopsticks that looked like lightsabers. Uh-huh. And they lit up and everything. And I was like, do I need this? Probably not. Do I want it? Yes.
Oh, back when the prequels came out, a friend of mine sent me a spoon, a little plastic spoon that had the spoon part was clear and had a little LED in the base, in the handle, that made it light up like a little lightsaber. I think it was from like a cereal box or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
That would not surprise me.
It was pretty cool though.
Yeah.
I think I broke it. I think I broke it immediately, but
yeah, that sounds right as well.
I was like, oh, this can get wet, right? No, no,
nope.
chopsticks. Yes. The length and shape of the sticks in question will vary based on a personal preference and the types of cooking and eating that you're doing. Shared dishes at a family-style table may involve serving chopsticks that are longer and don't have much of a taper to them for better balance and reach. Chopsticks that you would use to eat an individual plate of food, especially individual plates of food that are served in larger than bite-sized pieces. Might be, those chopsticks might be shorter and come to like a fairly fine tapered point at the tips. Not like sharp, but tapered. So that you can pinch off bite-sized pieces of the food or maybe like pick bones out of a piece of fish, something like that. And there are also more specialized chopstick shapes for different situations. There are chopsticks not even with a rubber band, but that are naturally joined at the handle with a spring for people who are first learning to use them. Or chopsticks that are curved to be more easily grippable, if that's a thing that would be useful to you. Chopsticks that fold for travel use or that have like a tiny fork or a dull knife or a spoon on the handle ends so that they're multi-purpose. I read about chopsticks that you can put sauce into.
What?
I still don't understand how this works. Like you unscrew the chopstick and you pour sauce into the tapered end.
Uh-huh.
And somehow it spills sauce onto your food as you, I'm not sure.
Wow. Technologically advanced.
I don't know.
Sauce distribution.
I don't know. etiquette. As far as I can tell, how you hold chopsticks in your hand doesn't really matter the way that it would with a fork. But yeah, everyone just kind of uses a grip that works best for them. Let me know if I'm steering folks wrong. If this is a thing in your family or in your area or that you've heard of, please let us know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as with any dining situation, there are different rules of etiquette that are going to vary from place to place, even table to table. Very basically, I would say that you should avoid stabbing food with your chopsticks if you can.
Another social faux pas I have made. Keep racking them up on this show.
I would say that generally the using your hands is preferable to doing a stabby stab, except when you're dealing with shared dishes. So I don't know. I mean, it you know, always go with what people are telling you to do around you. Like that is the best rule of etiquette. Watch and learn. Ask if you can. But also, avoid sticking chopsticks into things or at odd angles and like leaving them there. Like if you're gonna put chopsticks down, rest them on top of your dish or on a dedicated holder parallel to the table is the preferred position. Because when you stick chopsticks or other sticks into a bowl, it's reminiscent of funerary practices in a lot of areas. So that's weird for a dining table situation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And yes, chopsticks are also used in religious practices. And in some cultures are important gifts around weddings and births, stuff like that.
Yes. Well, how about the nutrition?
You know, I didn't look into edible chopsticks. I'm sure these exist.
Oh, I bet they do.
I'm sure they exist.
Oh. Listeners, you gotta let us know.
But generally, don't eat your eating utensils.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say that there has been some research into how the use of chopsticks encourages smaller, more mindful bites in many situations, and that can lead to slower chewing and to better digestion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nutrition related.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reading about that, and this is totally anecdotal experience, so it is not even a generalization make, but it reminded me of when I was in college and my roommates, one of them, he was from Korea, and he challenged my other roommate, Trevor, who's from Georgia, to like who could eat a bowl of ramen the quickest. And Sean was going to do it with the chopsticks and Trevor was going to do it with the fork. And Sean blew him out of the water.
Oh, like, sure.
Not even close. But that kind of goes back to like what you were saying about certain foods just seem like
They
work better with chopsticks. Yeah. But it was no competition. It was blowout.
I think the specific study that I was looking at that had found this was about eating rice. And it was about chopsticks versus a spoon versus using your hands.
Huh.
And of those three, the chopsticks were like, oh, slow down a little bit.
Right.
Although, yeah, no, I mean, I have certainly inhaled food using chopsticks.
Yes. So. It's just nonstop.
You're like a character in an anime. Yeah, just like Naruto, just like gone.
And then you're like, how did that happen? There's none left.
Yeah. More noodles. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We do have some numbers for you. Over 1.5 billion people use chopsticks daily. China is the number one producer of disposable chopsticks. However, in 2011, a small factory in Georgia, the country, was producing 10 million sets a week for export. But that business is now closed.
China in the early 20 teens, China was producing, depending on who you ask, some 57 to 80 billion pairs of disposable wooden chopsticks every year.
Wow.
As of 2017, the largest Chinese food delivery company in that country, responsible for like 46% of the food delivery market share, was going through some 20 million pairs a day.
Wow.
Yeah. Disposable chopsticks are a huge business, just massive. As of 2020, the industry was estimated to be worth $23.3 billion a year and was projected to not quite double, but hit $45.3 billion by 2027. With the largest percentage of growth in China, but the U.S., Canada, and Germany not very far behind. Apparently, there's a chopstick museum in Japan, in Obama, in the Wakasa area, where this specific type of layered wooden shell and lacquer process was developed circa like the early 1800s. They have some 3,000 pairs in their collection. And run classes that let you create your own pair, because you like whittle or sharpen down into the layers to reveal them, to make patterns. It's pretty cool.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. I don't think you can do it during COVID, but there's another museum in Shanghai that was founded in 1988 and includes over 1,200 pairs in their collection, with some 800 on display at any given time.
Oh. I would love visiting both of those places.
Yes.
Chopsticks can be really, really beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I love functional art.
Yeah. Yes. I do as well. That's definitely been the inspiration behind a lot of our episodes, like the things like the celery dish or just
these items
that we don't really see anymore or not in that like super fancy presentation, perhaps, although it does still exist, but just fascinating to me. Yes, and the history of chopsticks has long been quite fascinating.
It has been, and we are going to get into that.
Yes, but first we're going to get into a quick break for a word from our sponsor. Back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so I feel like we say this every time, and it's true every time. But the origin of this one can vary vastly, particularly when it comes to how people define chopsticks or even just particular regions that you're looking into. According to popular retellings, chopsticks may have come out of the distaste Confucius had for the knife, which we'll get more into in a second. But maybe they didn't come from that, but certainly were popularized.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But that was a while in the timeline after archaeologists have found what they think are chopsticks.
Yes, confusingly enough, because everyone's like, Confucius. I think because it's such a catchy, like, ooh, Confucius invented the chopstick. And then you're like, wait, what?
But like 5,000 years after, yeah.
Right, exactly. So the California Academy of Sciences, home of the Wright's Collection of Food Technology, which also sounds really cool, posits that people were using chopsticks in the form of twigs to stab food out of pots as far back as 5,000 years ago. Archaeologists have found bones that may have served as chopstick prototypes at Neolithic sites in China. The researchers speculate that chopsticks may have primarily been used as cooking utensils, kind of particularly, when you're talking about, like, hot food, stirring that around, stabbing at it, whatever it is. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think general consensus is that they were cooking utensils before they were table utensils. And these particular ones, the bone ones that you were just talking about, could be as old as like 7,000 years ago. And at first, researchers thought they might have been hair accessories, but based on their placement, like ritualistic placement near the hands, they were thinking instead that they might be hand-related accessories. So
hand-related weird accessories. We are normal humans and not robots on the show.
I know how to language so good.
Sometime around 400 BCE, cooks in Asia, and perhaps specifically China in this context, began cutting food up into smaller strips so that it would cook more quickly and save energy, and also because resources were scarce. And this kind of made the knife a little obsolete, which was something Confucius really vibed with, since he was all about nonviolence. Confucius once said, "The honorable and upright man keeps well away from both the slaughterhouse and the kitchen, and he allows no knives on his table."
Yeah, and he was working right around 500 BCE, so right. A lot of sources report that by like 400 BCE or so, chopsticks were really starting to catch on.
Yes. However, on the other hand, other sources say the first chopsticks originated in China around 1766 to 1122 BCE and were bronze in the beginning. Again, they were less an eating utensil and more a cooking utensil.
Yeah, and some researchers think that this is when they became more common in general rather than later on.
Indeed. And folks have pointed out the lack of archaeological evidence could be because of how bamboo and wood decay.
Sure. It makes perfect sense that bronze chopsticks stuck around a little bit longer. There are post hoc accounts of the last king of the Shang dynasty in China, circa like 1100 BCE, using these extravagant ivory chopsticks, despite the fact that there were no elephants in the area. So it would have been like a very extravagant thing to have.
Yes.
So, but Mystery's history.
Mystery's history. Chopsticks were present in Japan, Korea, and Vietnam by 500 CE. In these early days in Japan, chopsticks were reserved for strictly ceremonial purposes. And usually they were bamboo joined at the top, sort of like tweezers. Spoons may have actually been more commonly used in Japan during these times, these ancient times, with chopsticks serving as sort of an assist device for vegetables and proteins in soups.
Yeah, chopsticks as eating utensils may have come to Japan a little bit later in like the 600 to 700s, filtering through the aristocracy before they got to the common people, but filtering fairly quickly, like within the course of like 100 years or so. So,
mm-hmm.
But for sure, in Korea, burial sites dated to the 500s have been found to include brass, silver, and gold chopsticks. Yeah.
Yeah. And during China's early dynastic times, silver chopsticks may have been used out of this belief that the silver would turn to black if they came into contact with poison in the food, which we've discussed before. And as we've discussed before in previous episodes, while poisons like arsenic and cyanide won't change the color of silver, foods like garlic and onion will. So this led to a lot of like, someone's trying to kill me, but really it might have just
been. It was just delicious. Yeah.
Right.
Someone
right.
was trying to make my food delicious.
Right. How dare they? According to Q. Edward Wong, author of Chopsticks, A Culture and Culinary History, the Chinese, Koreans, and the Vietnamese had adopted communal eating by the 12th century, which dictated the longer length of their chopsticks for reaching as opposed to shorter length chopsticks out of Japan, where bento boxes were more popular than communal eating. The types of foods commonly eaten in these countries as well might have had something to do with it, with these differences. That being said, those with wealth in all of these countries may have used shorter, flatter chopsticks as a signifier of that wealth. Right, communicating you could afford to eat out of your own bowl. You didn't have to share with anybody. Yeah. Chopsticks both came out of necessity for the less well-off and an indicator of wealth for the aristocrats, which is really interesting. It's really interesting dichotomy.
Yeah.
Other sources point out that until the 10th century, the spoon was the most used utensil in these areas because millet or the like was the most eaten grain. And it's the smaller grain more suited to the spoon. That started to change in China and Korea soon after that as wheat-based grains like noodles started to replace millet. And wheat had been present previously. It had been available previously. But with advancements in cooking technology, it was edging out millet. By the 10th century, this meant noodles and dumplings, among other things, were growing in popularity, which chopsticks were better suited for. Later, others, and mostly Westerners, or at least that's what I found, would argue that chopsticks complemented and influenced the size and type of food. So almost a chicken and an egg argument that chopsticks stuck around because people like chopsticks and made food with chopsticks in mind, as opposed to the other way around, that chopsticks were sort of based around the food and cooking techniques, which I thought was interesting. Yeah. The increased consumption of rice beginning in the 11th century in large swaths of Asia also led to an increase in the use of chopsticks. On top of that, a lot of the popular dishes that were being consumed were boiled and were eaten hot. Chopsticks were better for that, for a lot of reasons, than fingers. Nearby countries may have been culturally influenced by China and China's use of chopsticks, particularly in countries like Vietnam, where China was once an imperial power. In our more modern times, wars like the World Wars, the Korean War, and the Vietnam War had a not small influence on chopstick use and the perception of chopsticks. Western war propaganda painted them in a really gross light. Other theories suggest that metal reusable chopsticks became more popular in Korea after rationing during the Korean War made them more necessary. Often they were made with recycled tin cans from the army.
In the late 90s, research on the ergonomics of chopstick design saw a boost of interest, which is cool because these are objects that people are using every day, multiple times a day. And later research has indicated that the habitual use of chopsticks is a risk factor of osteoarthritis in the thumb later in life. The ergonomics research showed that rounded handles and groove tips are the easiest for people to use. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love how people have chopstick preferences. I have a friend in particular who's like, not these. They're too, what does she say? Slippy. Slippy.
Oh, I hate a slippy chopstick.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I will say that I love the ones that have the grooves around the tip, you know, like just around like the last like inch or so of the chopstick. It's just got little rivets and circles. Yeah.
Yeah. I like those too.
Mm-hmm. So useful.
Mm-hmm.
And then around the same time, around the turn of the 21st century, the problem of disposable chopsticks began getting a lot of attention thanks to environmental activists and a bunch of artists. Like, a whole bunch of artists got commissioned by organizations like Greenpeace to do these big old installations, like public installations made out of used disposable chopsticks to kind of show the scale of the issue. And it is a big issue. And I mean, deforestation is a problem. Waste is a problem. Note that this is not restricted to chopsticks. Other disposable utensils are issues as well. I'm not saying that like, oh man, the 98 plastic forks that I get a week with all of my silly delivery are fine. But those chopsticks, that's not what I'm saying. And yeah, there are so many interesting things being done. Circa 2017, a Canadian startup called Chop Value began collecting used disposable chopsticks from local restaurants and developed a process to sanitize them, form them together with a resin into the sturdy composite sheet material, and then using it to make like art or shelves or furniture, you name it. As of early this month, September 2021, they have recycled over 37 million chopsticks.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah. Up through 2015, in terms of disposable chopsticks, over half of what was manufactured was made of bamboo. But then aspen began really edging into the market. In 2018, after a hackathon focused on sustainability issues, a number of Chinese food delivery apps took on the simple measure of just requiring customers to opt in to receiving utensils with each order instead of their inclusion being the default, which I think should be on every delivery order all the time, always.
Yeah. I have seen that. My experience has been, though, I usually, even if I opt out, I still get them. Which I think is like habit.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm hoping like, as that becomes more common and as time goes on, it will be more adhered to. Because, I'm the same. Like, I have tons of chopsticks. I have tons of utensils.
Oh, yeah. I know that there's a few a few of the organizations around town that have been doing, like, food drives and stuff like that. I've just, like, taken them tubs of these little packages of utensils and been like, can you give these away to humans? And they're like, sure. And I'm like, thank you.
Yay. Yeah, because they're not, a lot of mine aren't open. Like,
yeah.
I put them away and get out my reusable ones.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I was just checking for, like, any news about chopsticks.
Okay.
Today, as we were recording this, and I found an article describing we love a gadget.
Sure.
So in 2021, and I think August 2021, like recently.
Okay.
There's a Japanese company called Beeful. They released gaming chopstick holders for quick access to chopsticks. So it's sort of like a chopsticks holder you attach to your controller. And they were saying, like, it's great for quick, you get it quickly, and then you won't get anything on your finger, so you can go right back to gaming.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
This is not the first time we've talked about some kind of gaming food delivery gadget.
Yeah.
Or holder. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like this concept. Like, you've got your bowl of noodles, and you're playing your game. And just I don't know, like once every few, you know, like you finish what you're doing real quick and then you just take a bite of noodle and then you can go right back.
Yeah. I mean, my fear is, I have a lot of fears. There's a reason I'm not a professional gamer. I would spill the noodles on the controller in my haste.
I would drip sauce everywhere. It would be a whole thing.
It would be.
Yeah. Oh goodness. And this is like not our shortest episode, but there's so many little avenues of research. And I tried to suss out the beginning of the like industry of disposable chopsticks, and a bunch of uncorroborated sources were like, it was like 1877 or something like that, like something right around that window in Japan. And I was like, what, give me a, and they were like, no further information is available. I was like, oh, okay. And then another thing I was reading was like, construction workers were using disposable wooden chopsticks in like the 800s. So I'm like, well, that's a question for another day, I suppose.
That's true. It's true. I mean, there were so many, and like we said, also just regionally, there was a lot of interesting kind of different stories and the way people have used them and how they developed there and how they look in these different places. So yeah, there was a lot of paths we could go down that may or may not have had like resources for that we could find. So as always, listeners, if you know of something we missed, please let us know.
Yeah. Yes. Always, always, always. And we do have some listener mail from folks who have already written in, probably not about chopsticks.
Not that I know of, but it's still exciting that we get to read it nonetheless.
Yes.
Yes. And we will get into that after one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener mail. This whole time I've been craving just like a nice bowl of rice and soy sauce and wasabi. And chopsticks.
Oh.
And that's all.
I had some leftover mapo tofu for lunch, as I was just telling you during the break that we took during that commercial break, which we do sometimes. But listeners, I was having some leftover mapo tofu. And A, it was very good. But B, in my haste to get my lunch and bring it back to my desk, I grabbed a fork. And then was sitting here going like, Lauren.
Missed opportunity. Like, can I eat coleslaw with chopsticks?
Yes. That would be a terrific. It depends on the type of coleslaw. But now I just want more mapo tofu with chopsticks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That also sounds delicious.
Gosh, right? Bean sauce. Anyway.
Delicious. Claudia wrote, I just listened to the Dippin' Dots episode and it reminded me of being a TA during college. I got a degree in materials science engineering, which is quite literally the study of things. During my senior year, I was a TA for an intro to solid state chemistry class. And throughout the year, we'd use liquid nitrogen for certain experiments. However, once the semester ended, the liquid nitrogen was disposed of. In order to not let it go to waste and to have some fun, the last day of lab was always dedicated to liquid nitrogen fun day. We'd ask our students to bring in anything they wanted to throw in a bowl of liquid nitrogen to see what happened. We had the usual suspects, throwing in a rubber ball or flour and watching it shatter when it was dropped. Although those are classics, the best part of the class was always making our own makeshift Dippin' Dots. We'd let some ice cream get melty and then carefully let it drop into the liquid nitrogen bowl. It didn't come out nearly as beautiful and spherical as the real stuff, but it was tasty nonetheless. Thanks for bringing back such a good memory, and thanks for making the show what it is.
Aw.
That sounds so fun.
Yes.
And of course, I'm immediately like, what would I have thrown in there?
I'm like looking around at like everything in my life going like, oh yeah, I'd put that in a bowl of liquid nitrogen today.
Yes, and then drop it and watch it shatter.
Yes.
I have to go through all of my belongings and then own nothing.
This is the way that you get me and Annie to be minimalists. We're just like, well, can I make it shatter?
Yes.
Then I will get rid of it.
Yes, exactly.
Michelle wrote, I've loved your podcast from the very first episode. Aw, thank you. I adopted a baby recently, so lately you've been keeping me awake during those 2 a.m. feeds. During the blueberry episode, one of you, sorry, can't remember which one, because 2 a.m., mentioned going to IHOP and getting blueberry pancakes with blueberry syrup. My grandparents ran a hot stamping factory, a method of decorating plastics by using a hot press to melt a metal foil onto a plastic surface, and they made the lids of every IHOP syrup bottle for years. I've attached a picture of the blueberry syrup lid we keep in a shadow box. They also made beer tap poles and the buttons for soda machines. They passed away about 20 years ago, so you likely poured your syrup from someone else's bottle, but it made me think very fondly of them and remember the time I spent helping in their small factory. I'm sad my daughter will never get to meet them, but I'll tell her all about them whenever we eat blueberry syrup.
Aww. Oh, that's so sweet.
Oh, goodness. Oh, that's wonderful. I definitely ate blueberry syrup from one of their bottles.
Yes.
Any number of times that 25 to 30 years ago, yeah, would mm-hmm. have been prime Lauren eats blueberry syrup on pancakes at IHOP o'clock. So,
right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I know both Lauren and I love these things. I never think about like somebody had to make that device so that I could get the blueberry syrup on my blueberry pancakes.
That's when I start to, do the kids call it galaxy brain? Like, that's when I start to feel like galaxy brain. Like, when I just, like, look mm-hmm. at objects around me and when I'm not thinking about whether or not I would shatter them. And I'm just like, somebody made all of this.
Right?
What?
And we want to know the stories behind all of it.
That is high key why I do what I do, because this everything in the world around us is so endlessly fascinating and there are stories behind all of it. And somebody mm-hmm. cared about that blueberry syrup lid and I want to know who they are.
Yes. Me too. Well, that is within our purview because a lot of times I'll get in my head about like, I suddenly want to know all about skunks, which is true. Also dreams, also true. But this is food related. So we could learn about syrup pouring mechanisms.
Yeah.
For the show, for work.
Oh, goodness. But congratulations on your kiddo and mm-hmm. and on having a rich blueberry syrup history.
Indeed. And thanks to both of those listeners for writing. If you would mm-hmm. like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.